This is Wheel Bearings, episode 434. I am Sam Abu-al-Samad from Telemetry.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International. Sam's at CES. I'm at home. I'm winning life.
That is absolutely the truth. I just got into Vegas about an hour and a half ago. The press day doesn't actually start till it's now Saturday afternoon. The press days don't start till tomorrow or till Monday morning. By the time this is posted, it will be Sunday afternoon. But we've got, part of this program here where we're going to have a bunch of briefings with companies tomorrow. So we got three briefings tomorrow on Sunday before the show even gets started. And it's funny, on the flight from Detroit today, it's like almost half of the first class section was people coming here, including Gary Shapiro, who was sitting right across the aisle next to Jamie Butters.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to abstain from saying anything about Gary Shapiro.
Okay. Well, Gary is the president of the Consumer Technology Association, which is the organization that puts on CES. And we will leave the conversation there.
Yeah. you can guess.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Nicole pinged me about an hour or so ago to let me know that she unfortunately will not be able to join us today because she had to take one of her daughters to urgent care. She's going to be okay. Everything's fine. But she's held up for a little while. So she won't be able to join us today. So it's just me and you, Robbie. I know you didn't drive anything this week or ride anything this week, but recently you talked about something else that you rode.
I did.
You want to share some additional information with us?
So here's some fun and really exciting news. So remember when I talked about that Verge motorcycle, the TS Pro? It's the one where the motor is part of the rear wheel. They call it like a donut motor. So there is no chain. There's no because the motor is the wheel is the motor. The motor is the wheel. Cool, fun. It was a fun bike to ride. So they have some news that they're unveiling at CES this year. And the news is that the second generation, the second version of this bike, that one that they're going to be selling in the United States, will ship with a solid-state battery, which makes it essentially like the first production vehicle, really, that is at, they're going to mass produce. They're not going to make a lot. They're going to make 50 the first year. But you will be in 2026, according to Verge Motorcycles and their partner Donut Lab, you will be able to purchase a solid state battery powered electric vehicle, which is huge news. It is sort of, and I really hate this term, the holy grail of something. it's annoying, it's cliched, and this is sort of the holy grail. Electric vehicles. For those who don't know, solid-state batteries, the electrolyte is solid, it's not a liquid, and so it's the idea is that it allows for a more dense energy. So there's more, so you can get essentially the same amount of energy, let's say 100 kilowatts, in a pack that's like 60% the size, 40% the size, 50% the size. Sometimes it's probably about half the size of that pack. So if you have a vehicle. And the battery it weighs 2,000 pounds for, let's say, 300 miles. It can now be 1,000 pounds for, 300 miles. But also, because you've lost all that weight, you're getting extra miles because you've just lost 1,000 pounds.
So even also, with the same capacity, you get more miles per kilowatt hour because you're not moving as much mass.
The pack is less likely. There's very little thermal runaway like you would with lithium ion, so they're less prone to fire, which means you don't have to protect them quite as much. You don't have to build this giant. I mean, you still have to put some protection around it because you don't want it to get destroyed, but you don't have to build a tank around it. So you're also losing weight in that respect. The whole And they charge quicker. They charge much quicker than your regular battery packs. And potentially, if you can fix the problem, which is the biggest problem with them is dendrites. What happens is that as everything's going back and forth through the electrolyte, you start getting little spikes. And those little spikes are called dendrites. And they start creating shorts within your battery. And the biggest problem that's been with solid-state batteries is that their cycle life is pretty short. Because yes, they charge quicker. Yes, they have more energy density. They're less prone to fire. But if the battery can only be charged like 1,000 times, that's not ideal for a mass market. Donut Lab, which is the partner with Verge, says the way they are building their solid state batteries, they will not have dendrites, so they will not have the issues that everyone else is trying to solve when it comes to a solid state battery. So that's huge, huge news. I get they are making 350. They are not Honda. They are not Toyota. These are, you know, two companies that are actively working on solid state battery. They are not Nissan. They're not having to make, you know, 30, 40, 100,000, a million units a year with these batteries. But even 350, if you say, you know, we can do this, the batteries have a 5-year warranty. They're saying that the issue with the life cycle is they will, you know, they're going to last way longer than lithium ion batteries. It's a lot of really exciting stuff that they're sharing. With everything that comes out when it comes to solid state battery, you kind of have to like, okay, wait and see. But they told me that they are already building the batteries. They've been building them for months. They've put them on bikes. They've been riding the bikes around for months. They've been testing them in essentially in freezers and testing them essentially at like 100 centigrade, which is like, why? But they have. The 100 centigrade is the boiling point for us Americans with who deal with Fahrenheit, which I have no idea what Fahrenheit boiling point is. A lot.
It's 212. But 212 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it's really 212. Oh, I did know that. I was going to guess 212, but I didn't want. I was like, I'll sound stupid. So their bike that they have now that I've ridden, it has a lithium ion battery. They can essentially half that battery and still get the same range, which is about 217 miles is what they offer with the bike they have now. So you can get the same bike with the same amount of range that weighs less, because the battery is like 60% of what the lithium ion battery. Also, that donut motor in the back, that's smaller. That weighs 50% less. So the tire is not as quite as wide in the rear, which is nice for a bunch of reasons. A wide tire is great for stability, but it's also, you know, you're having to kind of fight a little bit more for nimbleness. The capacity of that battery is about 20 kilowatt hours, and it'll charge at the solid state at 100 kilowatts for a motorcycle. It'll have NACS. So it'll go from 20 to 60%, 20 to 80% in 10 minutes. That's essentially putting more gas in your motorcycle. If you get the long range version, which they just put two solid state batteries, it'll be about 33 kilowatts. And then that one will DC fast charge it up to 200 kilowatts. Again, this is a motorcycle. this is not a car. And it'll do 20 to 80% again in about 10 minutes. And again, both of these have a 5-year warranty on their battery. So they are definitely making sure that these batteries last a long time. It's really, really impressive. I'm excited to ride these bikes once they come out. They will start building them again the first quarter of 2026, which is now. I have a whole interview over on SAE. We'll put that in the show notes with the CEO of Verge Motorcycles and with the tech team over at Donut Lab. Originally, they were like one company, and then they sort of split off. I've talked to them a little bit about coming up with what they've done to create this battery. Obviously, they don't share too much because it is a proprietary bit of information. it is a big deal for them. And they also talk about, you know, looking beyond the two-wheel vehicle. They look, you know, where else can these batteries, you know, energy storage, your phone, like everything uses a battery now. If you can make that battery, if you can have that battery with more capacity and a smaller footprint that charges quicker, you know, it's not just the idea that, you know, you can get a car that does all this. You could, you know, your phone could last, you know, twice as long. Your earbuds could last twice as long. Your home battery can hold twice as much capacity. So it's a huge deal. It is from a relatively small, you know, a small company. They have been making motorcycles, selling them in Europe. The motorcycles they'll be selling in 2026 will be essentially for Europe and California. So if you live in one of those places, you can order one. They said there's still some spots. They have over 600, you know, I think they have reasons for selling them only into regions. I mean, most places, when you remember when EVs first came out, most of them were only sold in California. I think that's the sort of the same reasoning. Yeah, no, it was a pretty, after they shared the information with me after that ride. And I was like, whoa, slow down. When is this bike coming out? Expecting them to tell me by the end of the decade, which is essentially, you know, Honda's talking about by the end of the decade. Toyota, I think, is also talking about by the end of the decade. I forget what Nissan, I should have looked it up. I think Nissan's around the same time.
Nissan's been talking about like 2028 or so.
Yeah, so the end of the decade. I think everyone's like the end of the decade, which seems plausible and makes sense. And then this small company, and it comes out and says, "Oh yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it in a few months. Enjoy." So yeah, that's the big news for me out of CES.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. One of the big challenges. There's a lot of companies that have been developing solid state batteries. And, there's been, you know, a lot of companies that have gotten, you know, good samples of the batteries. The problem that everybody has had is scaling manufacturing, you know, and I think, you know, the fact that Verge is only planning to make a few hundred of these, you know, kind of maybe attests to that. You know, companies like QuantumScape and Solid Power and SES and all the traditional battery makers, you know, they've been able to make small numbers of these things, but it's scaling the manufacturing to high volume where it's been a challenge for everybody. And it'll be interesting to see if Donut Labs and Verge can actually get the volumes up, you know, and produce these in like, you know, enough for thousands or tens of thousands of motorcycles a year.
Yeah, I'm sure they're open to offering up batteries to other companies. I think this is for a company like them, if they can do this at 350, you know, they're making 600, you know, 700 packs essentially. Plus, they're talking about, you know, they're partnering with other companies already for the technology. Donut Lab is, if they can get, let's say they get 1,000, 2,000 batteries out this year. That gives them, you know, a little bit of a leg up on a lot of these sort of other companies outside, you know, the automakers, you know, because then they have real world tests, people going out and using it versus like, oh, we built one Mercedes that we're driving around and testing the solid state battery, which is great. You know, that's how you learn things. That's how you figure things out. But when you're, you know, we got 350 of these vehicles going around. And we also are building them for other companies and for other types of vehicles. And we're able to get the data from all these vehicles while we're building this battery pack. It's exciting times because it does. I think on one hand, it's good for this company individually. Sure, that's great, good for them. But I think overall, it's really good for the industry because it pushes everybody. If everyone's like, well, if we're just going to say end of the decade. And now this one small company is like, hey, we're making vehicles. That makes you like, oh, gosh. Okay, now competition is happening because now someone's out. Once somebody has something, then everyone's going to try to emulate it, try to at least catch up to them, to beat them, to be better than them. And at the end of the day, that's really good for EV adoption. Because I think, you know, a lot of people are still like, well, it takes like, you know, it takes an hour to charge an EV. I'm like, well, not, I mean, most modern EVs, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, if we, you know, if people are like, well, you can get a motorcycle. And again, more electric motorcycles, essentially the ones on the market are really sort of weekend, or they're commuter bikes. Because you can go somewhere, you come back. It's a daily rider. It's a commuter bike. It is not the motorcycle that, it's not the Harley Davidson rider. It's not the person who, you know, once a month rides 300 miles with their friends. Or they say they're going to ride 200 miles. They realize how 300 miles is a long way and they ride 200 miles. But they don't want to worry about, you know, charging. They want to ride out to whatever restaurant they're going to meet at. They want to hang out with their friends. They want to go broom, broom. And then they want to ride back. They don't want to like, oh, hey, let's stop. You know, my motorcycle only has 150 miles of range on the highway. That's not, that doesn't, you know, that's not the excitement of the motorcycle lifestyle, that sort of, that almost that weekend warrior lifestyle. You know, you want to be able to just ride your motorcycle all day without stopping to get gas. And if you do stop to get gas, it only takes 5-10 minutes. This gives you that option to join your Harley riding friends on their trip.
So this is going to charge at 100 kilowatts and... what's the size of the battery? What's the capacity of the battery?
They have the standard range and the long range. The standard range will charge at 100 kilowatts and it's 20 to 80% in 10 minutes. It's got a 20 kilowatt hour battery. The long range version has a 33.3 kilowatt hour battery. It'll charge it up to 200 kilowatts and the same, you know, 20 to 80% in 10 minutes charge time.
I mean, that's, you know, 10 minutes, that's good enough.
That's I got to get off the bike. I'm going to go inside. I got to pee. I got to get some beef jerky. I go out to the bike. Time's up. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
After 80%, obviously, it's probably 15 to 20 after, you know, if you want to charge to 100, which, you know, it's, that's slower, obviously, than putting gas in your bike. You know, 20-80% in 10 minutes is and to get the long range, sorry, it's either 200 miles on the highway, it's 370 in the city for the long range.
I mean, you know,
200 miles is 4 hours. That's fine.
Yeah, I would think after, you know, 200 miles on a bike, you're ready for a little bit of a break, stretch your legs a little anyways, you know,
riding
10 or 15 minutes.
If you ride, you know that sort of vibration that your hand, like if you haven't ridden in a while, there's the vibration of the handlebars and your hands feel really weird because you're getting used to it. If you haven't ridden in a while, you don't really get that on an electric bike. You get a little bit because of the road and it, but you don't get that constant vibration that makes your hands feel a little odd. And so that's, I think, you know, stuff like that is one of the reasons why people sort of like, okay, well, I'm going to take a little break from riding. This is why there's so many stops on these sort of monthly, you know, once a month rides, because these people are not riding every day. They don't ride, you know, when I lived in the city, I rode every day because that's how I got to work. That's how I got around the city. And so you get that sort of vibration just kind of goes away. You stop thinking about it. It's just part of how you ride. It's just part of, you know, what your life. But when you ride once a month because, you know, you don't, there's no need for you to ride a motorcycle in your work or for whatever reason. That vibration, it feels, it's a weird feeling. But when you ride electric bikes, and I've done a couple electric bike rides in the last year and a half, long days on ride programs, and it's just not there because you don't have that vibration the whole time. So you're actually less fatigued riding electric bikes. So you can actually ride longer.
I don't ride a motorcycle, but you know, I know, you know, from mowing my lawn, you know, I get vibration through
like
the handles of the lawnmower. Yeah. So I know the feeling you're talking about, that tingling sensation you get in your hands from the vibrations of the mower.
There, yeah, it's like that. It's that tingling, that the lawnmower vibration. I haven't mowed a lawn since, oh gosh, 30 years, maybe.
You live in California, like, so I think, yeah. So,
well, I lived in apartments for most of my life. And now that I live in a house, when we bought the house, it came with fake grass. So we never have to do that.
Yeah.
have a weed whacker that's electric, and that's pretty much used for weeds.
Yeah. I mean, all of my outdoor gear, my lawnmower, my weed whacker, chainsaw, hedge trimmer, all that stuff is battery powered anyway. And, you know, I've been a homeowner for, you know, going on 32 years now, and I have yet to ever water my lawn. I've never once watered my lawn.
Wow. Yeah. California, you have to water your lawn.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that's exciting. You know, first solid state batteries coming to EVs here in the U.S. this year. And
yeah, this year, first quarter of 2026.
And I bet you half of those 350 bikes get bought up by automakers and battery companies looking to test these things and tear down those batteries and figure out what the hell's inside them.
I feel like there's going to be they have over 600 reservations, but they're only selling them like in California and parts of Europe. So they still have reservations available. So if you're looking to buy one of these, they're over $20,000. They're not cheap. It's the Verge TS Pro. I think as soon as the news drops, it's $20,000 is nothing to an automaker. I think there's going to be a couple of them. Like,
it's peanuts.
They're like, we have an engineer in California. Have him order one now.
Yeah. Excellent. Have you ever searched for yourself online? I do it because in the work I do as an industry analyst and journalist, I have to maintain my credibility and can't afford to have it damaged by bad actors that are abusing my data. You'd be surprised and upset about what you can find about yourself online. Your phone number, home address, even details about your family are out there, whether you agreed to it or not. That's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name and why ads seem to track you across every screen. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura does more than just cleaning up your data from brokers. It's a full suite of digital security tools that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, and a password manager to keep your logins safe and spam call protection to cut off the scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they are exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and a 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover it quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura cleans up what's already out there, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. New Year's resolutions are weird. Change this, start doing that. A new gym membership? No. The reality is, if you're like me, real change that helps me day to day comes from finding tools to help me better interact with friends, family, and work, and just deal with my general anxiety. It's easy to get overwhelmed by the world at large, and the pressure to make some big changes doesn't help. What has helped me navigate an increasingly complex world is talking to a therapist. To help you find someone to talk to, BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Getting started is easy. BetterHelp does the initial matching work so you can focus on your therapy goals. They have a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences, and with over 12 years experience, they're going to help you find somebody. That means they typically get it right the first time, and well, this next part is very important. If you aren't happy with your initial match, you can switch. You can switch to another of BetterHelp's over 30,000 therapists at any time. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, I drove the Subaru WRX TS with a 6-speed manual transmission. And oh boy, was that fun. I really liked that car.
It is. I was like, I think myself, I talked to Tim Stevens, who has a big pile of like WRXs and STIs at his house.
Yeah. Various vintages.
Yeah. And we talked about, because I used to own a WRX, and it's, the TS is kind of like, hey, it's kind of chill. It's like the regular person's version. It's still fantastic. Like I think we both thought it was going to be like a little like, they're going to like, you know, shave off the edges and make it like, you know, sort of meh. Nope. It's just a fantastic vehicle.
Yeah. Subaru dropped the STI versions of the TRX, at least here in North America, a couple of years ago. Although there's strong rumors that, it's going to be coming back, you know, and they did show the two concepts at the Japan Mobility Show, including one that, you know, is based on the WRX, based on it's a WRX hatchback. And so, you know, there's a strong probability that it, you know, a WRX STI hatchback will be back sooner rather than later. What we have right now is the WRX TS, with the TS standing for tuned by STI. So it's not quite a full blown STI, but it's close. It's a turbocharged 2.4 liter four cylinder boxer engine, you know, which is what you've had in WRXs forever. 171 horsepower in this one, 158 foot pounds of torque, from 2000 to 5200 RPM. And that's one of the things about this, you know, it's been years since I drove an STI. But I, you know, some years ago, I drove a regular WRX and an STI back to back on consecutive weeks. And I actually preferred driving the regular WRX to the STI, for a daily driver, you know, for driving on the street, because the STI had a lot more turbo lag. It was a lot stiffer. This one, you know, is, I think, a really nice middle ground between the standard WRX and, you know, what we had as an STI. It's got plenty of low end torque, so it's really responsive. It's a lot easier to drive as a daily driver. It comes with a 6-speed manual, no CVT in it. It's got, electronically controlled dampers, adaptive dampers, developed by STI. It's got Brembo brakes all around, 6-piston front calipers, and dual piston rears. The one that I had was finished in the Galaxy Purple Pearl, which is this really dark purple color that in the sunshine, it looks fantastic. Unfortunately, it wasn't a lot of sunshine the week that I had it. It was mostly kind of overcast and, you know, snowing and raining and kind of miserable, kind of early winter weather. But when the sun was shining, it looked really fantastic in that Galaxy Pearl, it's really deep purple color. And then you get the gold colored calipers coming through the gray wheels. And then in the interior, it had Recaro performance seats, and there was these bright blue accents on the seats and on the dashboard and the door panels that, you know, contrasting against the black and predominantly black and gray interior, it really added a nice splash of color to the interior. It made it a little more fun. The seats are fantastic. You know, not a lot of adjustments on the seats, but you don't really need a lot of adjustments as long as you fit the seats. Fortunately, I do fit those seats. But, I took this thing out, on a day when the weather, it was cold, but it was, it was relatively nice out. The sun was shining a bit. The roads were dry. It came on. Fortunately, they put it on winter tires. So that was helpful because, the temperatures were, right around freezing, which you don't want to be driving summer tires on those kind of conditions. So the winter tires still gave it decent grip. And it was such a ball to drive, on some nice curving back country roads, outside of Ann Arbor. With the adaptive dampers on here, it was really nicely tuned. So it's something that, feels really sporty, but it's not punishing ride quality. It's actually really comfortable to drive. And this is something that you can easily use as a daily driver, and it's quick. The gearbox was really nice to shift. It had the usual array of assistance features that you find on modern Subarus, like the EyeSight system with the dual cameras, the stereoscopic camera system for adaptive cruise control. So if you need to take a road trip, it makes it a little easier with the adaptive cruise control. There's really only one complaint I had about the car. And that was the infotainment system. It's got support for wireless Android Auto and Apple CarPlay, but this is the old Subaru system that they've had for quite a while. They call it Starlink, and it's slow. The interface is okay, but it's slow.
It's just an iPad.
Basically.
It's like someone gave you a
But it's like a first generation iPad.
Yeah, someone gave you an iPad from like two generations ago and you stuck it in your car. That's essentially what it's like having this infotainment system. When I drove this car, I sort of forgot about the infotainment system because I was having so much fun driving. But yeah, I thought it was like, oh, this is kind of slow. Well, all right. Well, it doesn't have all the power went to the motor.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, we did all the other stuff. You can put your iPhone. You know what? You can connect your iPhone. Leave us alone.
Yeah. Well, it took a couple of minutes, just for Android Auto to pop up on the, to finally pop up on the screen, just to get some music or something. Just to get that far, I'd already been driving for a while before it even came up on the screen. But, if you don't need the navigation, if you don't need the music, just turn it off, turn off the audio, just listen to the sound of that Boxer because it's such a unique sound and it just sounds so good.
I used to work I used to work in entertainment. So I worked at a studio and one of the little perks of working at the studio is that you work 12, 15 hour days. So what would happen was there was a place down the street that did car washes and oil changes. And a guy would just show up at the studio and be like, "Hey, give me your car keys. I'll take your car. We'll, car wash, da, 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 and you can pay for it when I bring it back." It was great because I never had to worry about, getting my oil changed because they would just do it while I was working. They would just wash my car while I was working. They like to call my car the sewing machine. Because it does kind of sound like a sewing machine. They're like, "Oh, your sewing machine." I'm like, "Here you go." They're like, "All right."
It's a unique sound. I mean, the only thing that sounds remotely close to that, is like a Porsche Boxer engine. The Subaru even has its own kind of unique sound to it, distinct from a Porsche. And it's a fun sound. And this thing is quick. This thing is seriously quick. The 271 horsepower. It's a fairly compact car, which means, the back seat's not huge. I could fit back there behind myself, but it's probably not something you'd want to have, Robbie sit in the back seat of, unless he was maybe sitting behind Jill Simonello, you know, who's
Robbie and
4 foot
Jill.
11, but
like Jill and I are going around solving crimes, traveling the world in our WRX,
you know, and currently, you know, the WRX is only available as a four-door sedan. You can't get it as a hatchback, unfortunately. Hopefully that's something that will change. You know, we'll see. But even as a sedan, you know, this is a great little car to drive.
I think in Detroit, this is like the perfect car.
Yeah.
Because I've driven like the Aston Martin Vantage. I've driven like a Carbon Corvette. I've driven like all these, you know, and supercars around my part of the Bay. And we in my part of the Bay Area, we have, you know, hills and mountains and windy roads. Except my part of the Bay doesn't have like Marin money, so the roads can be a little rough. and all those other cars get tossed around like there's nothing. Because they're so, like, you're going around a corner and they're just like, it's rough. So you're essentially tossing the supercar around. The WRX, this one, and I drove the other one, the one right before this. So the TS and then the previous generation, and both of them just ate those road up like there was nothing. Just absolutely, yeah. Just tore through.
And that's the nice thing about the way the suspension is set up. You know, it does, you know, it, you know, and it's got, there's kind of that Subaru rally heritage in there, you know, where, you know, they, you know, rallies, you know, driving it on unpaved gravel roads, you know, bumps and stuff. So, you know, it's got to have some suspension compliance to it. And so it just, you know, it works really well. So, you know, on roads like we have here in Michigan or, you know, around where you live, Robbie, you know, the whole system works really well. It's a good combination.
It is, yeah. And most people don't know what this car is. That's the best part. It's a sleeper.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, you know, it doesn't look like anything, you know, crazy. You know, it looks fairly conventional, you know, like just a basic compact sedan. You know, it's got, you know, nice looking wheels on it. But other than that, you know, it looks fairly conventional. See, the Monroney they gave me didn't have a price on it, so let me get the
free
pricing here. So, you know, the base WRX, which strangely enough is premium trim, that's the base WRX, is a little over $37,000. The TS that I had, you know, if you're going to get the TS, you know, spring for the $395 for the Galaxy Purple. And let's see, this one came to a grand total of $49,270, which is not inexpensive. But, you know, if you're considering, you know, if you're considering something like a VW Golf R or let's see what, you know, some other,
Type R.
You know, a Civic Type R or an Integra Type S. You know, that's not, you know, or, you know, a GR Corolla, you know, it's not quite as, you know, it's more subtle in the way it looks. You know, if you want something that's not going to jump out and grab too much attention from, you know, from the law enforcement that you might be driving past at, slightly more than the speed limit, you know, this might be a better choice. Plus, you know, a Golf R, you can't get it with a manual transmission anymore. It's you know, automatic only or DSG only. You know, this 6-speed manual transmission, $49,000. You want to take a guess at the destination charge?
I already saw it.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's $1,170.
It's relatively cheap compared to everything else.
Yeah, by today's standards, it's quite cheap.
I think of all those cars you just named, I think this is probably the best balanced out of all those. This is the one.
Yeah.
This is sort of the winner of all of those cars. I think the GR Corolla is a little bit more fun, but it's also like will rattle your teeth out. For the term gazoo, this is the most gazoo. Yeah. of those vehicles. Everything else is a little bit tamer. I feel like especially the type that the Golf R, which is unfortunately, I think they really shaved off a lot of the sort of like danger of that vehicle. And now you can't even give it to manual transmission. So I think of all those, this is the one that it's the less, the one that doesn't really stick out, but the overall, this is the best one. That second, that short gearing of second is so amazing.
Yeah.
Because you're just like first, second, really, you're in the third really quickly because of that rally, you know, inspired. And a lot of people don't, they have problems with this vehicle with the manual transmission because they can't figure it out. Give it like a week. Like after like a week, some people will take a month, but once you figure out the gearing of this vehicle, oh, you that's it. You're in love. You're in love with this vehicle for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And, you know, if you like driving a manual, you know, you'll spend a fair bit of time actually shifting it, and it just works really well once you figure it out.
Yeah. So it's a fantastic.
Yeah, no, I definitely like this car. Had a lot of fun with it.
And I know that, someone's going to tell us that they raised the prices on all these vehicles, the WRX, and the BRZ. And I know they did. Subaru is a small company. They raised the price without like raising up the destination. So yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, by today's standards, you know, it's not like it's wildly overpriced relative to the competition.
It's
fairly competitive.
The engineering you're getting in this vehicle is, it's not a high, you know, it's not a high volume vehicle. So they got to, you know, good times.
All right. Let's move on.
let's leave the Subaru Love Fest.
We didn't, I didn't give particularly high marks earlier this year, or actually it's last year now, when Ram brought the Hemi back to the 1500. After driving it, I thought it sounded great, but you know, if I was actually buying one, I would probably buy the Hurricane because it's better, you know, more powerful, faster, better payload, better towing, and gets better fuel economy. When Tim Kuniskis came back after his brief retirement, after Carlos Tavares left Stellantis, the first thing he did was bring the Hemi back to the Ram. And as soon as that was confirmed, everybody knew it was just a matter of time before the Hellcat was back. Because if there's one thing that Tim likes to do, it's put a Hemi or a Hellcat in everything. The Ram TRX is back for model year 2027. It's coming back this summer. It looks pretty much the same as it did before and the same as the RHO, you know, so it's the sheet metal is all carryover. They did make some improvements, you know, so it's got the updated electrical architecture from, you know, when they refreshed the Ram 1500 last year. And so that means it's got, you know, updated infotainment and other features like, you know, it's got level 2, you know, hands off assisted driving capabilities. Although, you know, why you would want that on this vehicle, I'm not quite sure. The big thing is they got more power out of it, you know, because, you know, if you're going to bring it back, you know, why bring it back with less power than your primary competitor, which is the Ford Raptor R? So they bumped it up from 702 horsepower to 777 horsepower.
Dun, dun, dun. It's what you give the people what they want.
Yeah.
And this is what they want. Can any of the people afford it? No. But you give them what they want.
Yeah, I mean, it starts now. When the TRX first came out, you know, it started at about $72,000. Now it's going to be $102,000, including the $2,595 destination charge. But it has an SRT badge now. They're bringing back the SRT to Stellantis. So,
okay. Does it have the angry kitty cat on it?
It does. Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go. You got that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to 3D print one of those, put it on my Ionic 5. Done.
There you go.
Look at that. I got a Hellcat in my Ionic 5. I'm going to put a Hellcat in my BRZ. I'm going to put a Hellcat on my Vespa 250. Boom.
You know, I'm sure that this is going to help, you know, Ram's bottom line. You know, they'll sell some of these, you know, it'll help their profit margins for a while. You know, I don't know how many people can actually afford these things. But you know, it's back, you know, but you know, they seem like they have one strategy for what to do. Just put a Hemi or a Hellcat in everything, you know,
put a Hemi
when,
or a Hellcat.
When are they going to come up with something original?
Which, again, it's what the people want. The thing is, they just need to start naming everything Hemi. Just be done.
Yeah.
Make an affordable car. Bring back the Dodge Rampage. Put like a 4-liter turbocharged. I'm not 4-liter. A 4-cylinder turbocharged engine in it. Call it a Hemi. Be done.
The Hemi 4.
The Hemi 4. There's only 4 letters in Hemi. Each letter gets its own cylinder. Boom. Thank you.
But that's not all. That's not all from Ram this week.
Dun, dun.
They also launched an updated Power Wagon that you can now get with the Cummins Turbo Diesel. Before, you could only get it with the 6.4-liter Hemi. Now you can get it with the Cummins Turbo Diesel. And so it's basically a Ram Rebel HD with triple lockers, but a little bit cheaper than a Rebel.
You could pull a house off its foundation with this truck.
Pretty much,
How much dirt? That's 1,075 pound-feet of torque.
You got all the torque.
You get all the torques. Pull a house. If you buy one of these, guess what? Everyone's calling you to pull that tree stump out of their yard. Because you can do it. You can pull, yeah.
Payload is about, with the 6.5-foot bed, that's about 3,600 pounds.
Wow.
It's got some significant payload capabilities. Which is, you know, to be fair, that is significantly better than a TRX. You know, these light duty off-road trucks, typically they lose a lot of payload capacity because you're adding all this extra weight for the skid plates and the big giant tires and everything else. I think the TRX payload capacity is only about 1,400 pounds, which is less than my neighbor's 4-cylinder hybrid Maverick. So at least, you know, with the Power Wagon, you still get lots of payload capacity and lots of towing capacity. I think this thing will tow about 19,000 pounds. You pretty much could pull most houses off their foundations.
Yeah. And it starts at $88,500.
Hey. That's 15 grand less than a TRX.
Our car's lease is ending in June. And so we're like, I guess we'll just get another, maybe we'll just find an Ioniq 5. That's, you know, essentially the same car on the lot for like 25. And I'm like, man, that's going to be a lot of money every month for a car payment. And then $88,000 pops out.
And you think, oh, that's kind of cheap.
That's pretty cheap. That's nothing. I'm just like, how? I don't understand how people can afford. I think priorities are different for folks. Plus, again, I live in the Bay Area, so my cost of living for everything.
So a lot of your other expenses are a lot more than.
I bought a house in the Bay Area. That's really where it comes down. Is that I bought a house in the Bay Area, so my expenses go to, you know, a big chunk of my stuff goes to my home, and then I have a lot of animals. So, you know, they got to eat. But $88,000, $90,000 probably after everything. Probably 95. What's the 88,000 including destination. Oh, bravo. Oh,
so it's a bargain.
Bravo, Stellantis, for doing that. There you go. So $90,000. There you go. Bravo. You know what? I'm not going to complain about it. Because because Stellantis did the right thing and said including destination. I'm very easily swayed.
Okay. So let's swing to the opposite end of the spectrum from a Power Wagon. Do you ever watch the Rich Rebuilds YouTube channel?
I like once or twice, like a long time ago.
I've watched some of his videos. He's pretty good. And so this Rich Benoit lives in Massachusetts, and kind of his shtick is finding really cheap cars that most others would just send to the scrap heap, would not spend any money on them. You know, like he bought a Fisker for like almost nothing that wasn't running, and he managed to get it running. Fisker Ocean, managed to get it running again. This is one that popped up in my YouTube feed the other day. It's actually from about a year ago, but I thought it was kind of fun. He got an opportunity to get a Honda Beat that wasn't running. Basically the way he described it at the beginning of the video was, I was offered this Honda Beat for the low, low price of just get it off my lot.
Ooh.
So he got the Beat, brought it back to his shop. And he had, an Arcimoto. You've ridden the Arcimoto, right?
I have ridden the Arcimoto. It's a fun little vehicle. I really don't know if they're around anymore. I know they had some problems. I know that they were kind of like hit or miss for a couple of years trying to get everything going. But it made a lot of sense for like small towns, small dense towns, like college towns. It sounded awesome.
Well, Rich decided to merge the Honda Beat and the Arcimoto. Since the Beat had an engine that wasn't working, he pulled the powertrain out of it, pulled the fuel tank out of it, pulled a bunch of other stuff out of it, and then took an Arcimoto apart. The Arcimoto's got dual motors driving the two front wheels. So the Arcimoto, for those who don't remember, is it's a trike. A tandem seat trike. It's electric. And he pulled the motors and the batteries and the electronics out of it. And he put them into the Honda Beat. And he got it running. And then took it out and was, the third video in the series. I'll put the links to the videos in the show notes. The third video in the series, they did what they call the Honda Beat Off, he went and drove it against a standard gas-powered Beat. So the Beat, for those not familiar with it, is this tiny little mid-engine roadster that Honda sold in Japan many years ago. It's a K car, so that means it's got a 660cc three-cylinder engine with all of 63 horsepower. And a 5-speed manual transmission. My friend Mike Austin's got one.
I've driven it. Fantastic. Yeah, I love it. Barely.
Yeah, but it's not, it's not real fast. It was never particularly quick. I'll let you watch the video to see how the electric Beat, the Arcimoto powered Beat, does against the original gas powered Beat. But it's fun. It's a fun project.
I love everything about this. This is everything I wanted to do with my old Datsun 2000 Roadster. I essentially just wanted to buy the Roadster back. This is my first car from a friend of mine who has it, who won't sell it to me. I won't say his name, but he knows who he is. And once every other year, I'm like, dude, can I buy it? He's like, no, I don't really want to sell it. I think his kid is going to do something with it, which I'm like, okay, all right, fine. But they haven't done anything with it. And it makes me sad because we were going to do a whole video series about making it an EV at one point. And of course we never got it. So, but this, the Honda Beat is a wonderful little K car, And I would love to have one that has a little, you know, that's built, that's powered by the Arkimoto.
You know what would be cool?
Just a cruise around town.
Yeah. You know, now Honda, you know, instead of like the Beat was built in like the late or early 2000s, I think. Late 90s. They currently have a model that's sort of a successor called the S660. What would be cool is if they took the electric powertrain from the Super One that I drove in Japan in October, their little electric hot hatch K car.
Oh,
put that into the S660.
Oh, that would be. That's just like that's someone with a lot. Yeah. See, this is why if I were rich. There's a couple things I would do. First, I would buy like just a big plot of land and just be the guy who has a lot of like rescue animals. Like, cause that's like my wife and I, that's kind of our deal. We rescue a lot of animals. Like all of our animals were essentially like, well, like one of our cats doesn't have a paw because the people were like, well, we don't know if he's going to take him. We'll take him. He's missing a paw. We'll take him. And so, that would make my wife so happy if we bought a big ranch and we just rescued a bunch of animals. So there'd be that, and then there'd be just the most ridiculous car bill. And I would be horrible at putting them on YouTube. I would have to hire somebody. I would give somebody a job to just shoot video of me doing bad builds and swaps.
Yeah. That's basically what Rich does.
Yeah. I would do what Rich is. I would just be Rich's best friend. I would call him every day. Rich, have you decided to do this yet? I'm going to do this, okay? So there'd be signs. Like, I wouldn't tell people I was rich, but there would be signs.
Yeah.
Why does he have 57 dogs now? And why? Is he driving a Model T with a Viper engine in it? Yeah, I think he's going to die.
Not even sure a Model T frame.
It couldn't hold the weight. The way it would just collapse.
A Viper engine. Yeah.
But you could, you know, I think every old car, unless you're like super like, oh, it's got to be original, just throw an EV, an electric motor in it. I saw an iX the other day, yesterday, in fact, that the side had been swiped. Like both wheels were destroyed. The car was a total loss, but the battery area looked fine, and I was like, I was driving with my wife, we're going to lunch, and I'm like, we should follow that car and steal the battery and the motors out of it. And she's like, what are you talking about?
Just put them in the garage until I figure out something to install them in.
You know what, we could make the Jaguar a real car.
There you go.
It's one of those things that you have in your house. You ever have a chore that you just keep putting off? This is it. I have to do is go down and update some paperwork and it's gone. We're going to give it to like KQED. We're going to give it to like NPR. Like, you know, this cash for cars thing. Like you just give it away and then you write it off at the end of the year. We don't care. Just want it gone. And I'm just like, oh, every time I'm like about to do it, something happens. I'm like, oh.
Yep. I have plenty of those projects around the house.
Yeah. Mine just happens to be a giant X-Type sitting in my driveway, taking up space.
Okay. So we have talked previously about electromechanical door latches in cars. And, you know, we've been critical of a bunch of automakers, including Rivian, for these things. Well, an article popped up the other day. Apparently, and I guess there's a whole thing on Reddit where Rivian owners are, because the mechanical backup latches are so hard to find on these things, especially on the R1s, particularly on the rear doors. So on the rear doors, they're actually hidden. There's a panel by the door handle that you have to pop out. So you need like a screwdriver or something if you're stuck in the car and the door, the electronic latch won't work. You have to pop off this little panel and then reach in and pull on this cable to release the door handle. So, you know, if something happens, you know, you get into a crash and the doors won't open and your kids are in the back, how are they supposed to do that? You know, or if you got a friend in the back that is not familiar with this car, how are they supposed to know that? Or, you know, even the owner, how's anybody supposed to know that's how you do it? And so some Rivian owners have apparently started taking to their own DIY emergency door releases on the back doors of the R1S and the R1T. And you can see the photo in here. You can see the rope. They basically took off some of the parts, attached this rope to the wire loop that you're supposed to pull after you pull off this panel. You know, and then just have it hanging out. It looks so ridiculous, but it's ridiculous.
It is a little bit because they're using paracord. At least it looks like on brand, but it does look ridiculous.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. It does fit, you know, with the adventure theme of a Rivian. Nonetheless, yeah, it's like, you know, if owners have to do this, then the manufacturer is doing it wrong. Rivian, take note, fix this. Stop doing this.
Just make a mechanical door. They've worked for decades. It's just a little click. I had the Model X and they gave me the wrong one. They gave me a pre-production model to review by accident. Uh-huh. Anyway, I had to find where the little cord was. And to do all this I had to rip things out. And it was a huge pain in the butt. And it still didn't fix the problem. But yeah, it's... We're clever for the sake of clever. Stop it.
Yeah. all right. The Tokyo Auto Salon is coming up in a couple of weeks. And this is, you know, this is a very different kind of show from the Japan Mobility Show. This is more like Japan's version of SEMA, where you have all kinds of custom stuff on display. And I found this article. There is a school in Japan. Forget the name of it here. It's the Nihon Automotive College. And a group of students there have been working on a project for the Tokyo Auto Salon to take a Daihatsu Copen, which is a K car. It's a little K car roadster. And they're transforming it into a Supra. Putting miniaturized, you know, Supra bodywork on a Daihatsu Copen, which just looks so cool.
Yeah, no, this is awesome.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a little Hot Wheels version of a Supra.
Hot Wheels,
except it's drivable.
Yeah, you can drive it around town.
And unlike the actual Supra, it's a convertible too.
Ooh, man, no car have I gotten into where I get into and immediately like this car should be a convertible. And it's because it's, you know, it's the Z4, it's the convertible. It just, you could feel it. You can feel that its soul is that of the convertible.
Yeah. All right. Jalopnik had one of their listicles that they do all the time. This one is 9 trucks that had really super cool bed features. You know, this is one of the things, you know, the competition in the pickup truck market has led manufacturers to, you know, to get a little more creative and, you know, figure out what kinds of interesting utilitarian features. Some of these are better than others, but yeah, some of these are really good. Like one of my favorites has always been the Rambox that they launched back in 2009 on the Ram 1500. Yeah, so this is on the sides of the bed. You've got these storage lockable storage boxes, and you can put tools and all kinds of other stuff in there. Including even a guy named Mike Levine will fit in the Rambox.
Oh,
if you know, you know. Let's see. But some of the other things, you know, that they've got on here, the Utilitrak that they had on the original 2004 Nissan Titan, which was this track system with cleats that you could move around so you can tie stuff down and retain stuff. The dual action tailgate on the Honda Ridgeline that opens like a regular tailgate or opens sideways. You know, they did that long before anybody else started getting these crazy tailgates. The Avalanche midgate back in 2002, the multi-pro tailgate that GMC launched in 2019. What else? And of course the in-bed trunk in the Ridgeline. You know, the Ridgeline, you know, even though it's never been a huge seller, Honda got really creative with that truck.
The Ridgeline is so great. I love the Ridgeline so much. And when my wife got into one, she's like, oh, is this electric? I'm like, no. She's like, no. Like, she really liked it because it was like, it's a good size. It's really comfortable. It's a Honda Odyssey, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's comfortable. It's like, I'm like, look, it's got a tailgate. You know, a trunk underneath the bed. She's like, oh, like everything about the Ridgeline is awesome, except that people are like, oh, but it's not an F-150. It's not a real truck because it's a body on frame. It's not, you know, I'm sorry, it's a unibody. It's not body on frame. But no, the Ridgeline's dope.
Well, you know what you need to do.
And that's why I always say the R1T is essentially just the Ridgeline.
Yeah. Well, if you could get that IX you were talking about, and get like an old first generation Ridgeline. There you go. I bet you you could make that fit. Put the IX battery and the motors in here.
Yeah, we might lose the trunk though for the batteries. Maybe.
Not necessarily, because the battery is between the axles, I think.
Yeah, we could make it work.
Yeah.
The money I would do. The money I would just blow through with my million-dollar lottery ticket that I don't have, that I never play the lottery.
And of course, one of the best on here, of course, is Ford Pro Power on board. You know, if you're going to have some electrification, either a hybrid or battery electric on a truck, you might as well put a bunch of plugs in there.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pro Power is great. I'm going to go somewhere and do some work. We did a wedding and we had the F-150 Lightning, the band, and they were doing power. They were turning power out around that time, that weekend. They were talking about having to cut power in places in Northern California. And I was like, I got the F-150 Lightning. I could save this wedding if things go sideways. I was all ready to go. I brought some extra like extension cords. It didn't happen.
Extension cords and power strips.
Extension cords and power strips. That's all you need.
But you were ready. You're ready.
I was ready.
That's the way it always works. You know, when you're ready, then everything goes fine. You know, it's when you're not ready that everything goes sideways.
That's why I'm always ready.
Yeah. All right. So another thing that popped up was an article about an old Ford concept. Interestingly, this one was on Autoblog, and they did not link to an article that I wrote for Autoblog back in July of 2007. So this is all about the Ford Interceptor concept. So the 2007 Detroit Auto Show, Ford unveiled three concept vehicles. They had this van called the Airstream, which had or purportedly had their high series drive, you know, it was a fuel cell plug-in hybrid system in it. They had the Lincoln MKR, which was this four-door Lincoln coupe concept that introduced, you know, a design language that they subsequently brought to all of their production models for a few years. And then the Interceptor, which was this big classic American sedan. It was built on a stretched Mustang platform. I will put a link to the original article that I wrote back in 2007, because usually when automakers build these concept cars, more often than not, they're not even drivable. But even if they are drivable, they rarely ever let outsiders actually drive them. But for some strange reason, in July of 2007, Ford had an event at their Dearborn Proving Grounds where they brought out these three concepts plus some other stuff that they were working on. And they let us actually spend the day driving these things around the Proving Grounds. And so got to drive this this Interceptor. And so I've got the the article that I wrote for Autoblog in 2007 all about this. And this thing, like I said, it was built on a stretched Mustang chassis, an S197 Mustang chassis. It had a 5-liter Camera crate engine in it. So it was a 5-liter twin cam. This is before the Coyote. And it was a crate engine, and it had a big 4-barrel carburetor on it. And this particular day when they had this event was like ridiculously hot and humid. It was like 90 plus degrees and about 90% humidity. Oof. And, because this was a concept, it didn't really have proper cooling and everything. It didn't have good, they hadn't sorted out all the airflow through the engine compartment. So, this thing kept vapor locking, so you'd drive like 2/3, 3/4 of a lap, and then it would grind to a halt because the carburetor would vapor lock. And then it would have to sit for 10 or 15 minutes under the tent, with the hood up while they let it cool off, and they're blowing fans vapor on the thing. Lock.
Oh my God. My dad had a 260Z that would vapor lock constantly. Use me up. It started choking because it couldn't get any power. It couldn't get any gas because it would vapor lock.
This was a cool looking car, but they obviously never built it. Instead, we got the 2010 Ford Taurus, which was not quite the same thing.
No one talks about the 2010 Ford Taurus, and now we know why. This is a cool, yeah. I think, I don't know, this it's fun because the front of it is very reminiscent of the Flex. It's got the sort of the Flex front end. I think it's cool. I think you'd have to adjust it a little bit in order to sell it, obviously. But this is a cool car, and I think it would have behooved Ford to just pull this out, throw an EV engine, get some of those F-150 Lightning motors you got sitting around, throw them in the Interceptor. And watch people lose their minds.
Yeah, that would be fun. Okay, let's see. Back to the rundown here. So I mentioned Fisker earlier, Rich Rebuilds. He had rebuilt a Fisker Ocean. He also did a Fisker Karma. He found a Fisker Karma and got that thing running again. But, Fisker Automotive, which was the original company that Henrik Fisker started back in 2008 or 9, and built the Fisker Karma, and it went into production briefly. They built, I think, about 2,100 of them before the company went bankrupt. He actually got more Oceans built than he did of Karmas. After, when Fisker Automotive went bankrupt, they during the bankruptcy process, the assets of the company were bought by a Chinese company called Wangsheng, and they launched Karma Automotive. So they rebranded as Karma Automotive, and they basically continued to build these things in very small volumes ever since. There's probably, I think, maybe 500 or 600 of these things that have been built over the last 12 or 13 years. Over time they updated it. Originally it had, so the Karma was an EREV. It was an extended range EV, true EREV with the engine was not connected to the wheels at all. It just drove a generator and had a battery pack. It had about 40-ish miles of range originally, and then the engine would start up and run the generator to keep the thing going. Over time, they replaced the original GM 4-cylinder engine that was in there with a BMW 1.5-liter 3-cylinder turbo that had more power. They replaced the generator. They replaced the batteries. They replaced the motors. They did some tweaking to the design, but they're still basically building the same car. And even now, you know, they recently, you know, they rebranded it as the Karma Rivero for a number of years, and they recently discontinued the Rivero and launched a new. What are they calling it now?
Gisera?
Yeah.
Gisera?
Gaisera.
Gaisera. I mean, how do you say that?
I don't know. But, I mean, when you look at this, you know, as soon as you see it, yeah, they've refreshed the styling. They changed the front and rear fascias. Yeah, they changed the front fenders a little. But it's clearly, it's still the original Karma.
Yeah. Which is a pretty car.
Yeah. I mean, this is the car that Henrik designed, you know, 17 years ago.
It's still a really pretty car. It's still, yeah, I still like the way it looks. Would I buy one? Oh, God, no. But I love the way it looks.
Yeah. Well, I actually had a chance to drive the Rivero probably about 6 or 7 years ago. They brought one up to the management briefing seminars in Traverse City. And their PR guy at the time, who's actually here with us now, he used to be a GM. He's a guy named, why am I blanking on his name now? Anyway, he's here at CES now. I ran into him and said, "Hey, I'm working with Karma now. You know, we've got a Rivero here. Do you want to try it out?" I said, "Sure. Why not?"
Yeah.
And took it out for a drive for about 45 minutes, and it was actually quite fun.
It looked, yeah. I think it's just, no one knows it's even a car still. I talked to Karma at Monterey Car Week like 5 years ago probably. And they're like, "Yeah, you know, we got the car." At the time, I'm like, "Oh, it's cool. It's still beautiful. It's still this." But like, no one knows.
Yeah.
It's like, no one knows they're a thing. It's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a cool indie band that everyone's like, "Oh, wow, this is really cool." No one knows the indie band. It's the band that, it's like one of the bands when I talk to friends, I'm like, "Have you heard the new blah?" And they're like, "I don't know what the hell you're talking about."
All right. One last story. VW, as I was flying out here today, got a email, you know, got a notification from the VW newsroom. They unveiled the interior of the new ID Polo, which we've talked about before. So this is their new smaller EV. You know, it's supposed to be priced under 25,000 euros. It's a shame that this thing is not going to be sold in North America, because I think this
I was so happy when I saw this photo.
Yeah. So the big thing is the interior. You know, I mean, one of the big complaints about all the current ID cars, the ID3, ID4, the ID Buzz, you know, is all the touch controls. You know, especially, you know, they've got touch controls for the volume and the temperature and everything at the bottom of the center touchscreen. You know, it's just annoying to use. And the ID Polo, VW says they've heard the complaints about touch controls. Going back to physical controls.
Yay.
So you got a bunch of physical, there's a whole row of physical buttons. There's a rotary volume knob on the center console. So you don't have, you know, if you just want to adjust the volume, you don't have to reach all the way up and reach out for the screen. You can just reach down, give it a twist. It's got manual vents, just as it should be. It's got physical buttons on the steering wheel, not touch, you know, haptic buttons on the steering wheel.
Four window levers. Not two and a weird, like, switch front to back. Four window levers.
Yeah. I mean, it's they have heard all the things that everybody hated about all their current generation EVs, and looks like they've fixed almost all of them.
I think this is their faux LCD displays in the dash cluster.
Yeah.
I think they're
there's a 10-inch there's a 10-inch digital display for the instrument cluster, and one of the options on there is basically a replica of the old first-generation Golf instruments. You know, kind of like Ford did on the Mach-E, but on the regular Mustangs, you know, where you have the option to get the Fox body gauges on the digital instrument cluster. Yeah. You know, VW is doing this on the ID Polo as well. So I would love to be able to try one of these out.
Put all these controls in the ID Buzz, make it 800 volt, put some cup holders in the back seats, lower the price, give everyone a real cheap option so they can upbuild it, and Volkswagen's back. They're back, baby. After, I don't know, a very long time of just sort of not making it anyone care. This is beautiful.
All right. We got some listener emails and messages. So some of these we're going to address. A couple of these we are going to save because they concern Nicole's next car. So we're going to save those for Nicole. But there are a couple that we're going to hit. The first one is from Mr. Burns. This was on the Discord. Says, so here's a topic for the next episode, or maybe it should have been for Sunday's episode. What was the weirdest thing you had to fix on your vehicle in 2025, either diagnosed and fully repaired? Example, Nicole had to have her gone EV Jeep after it was dragged over and through an airport parking garage gate system. And Mr. Burns, his example is, I'm waiting until 2026 to replace $700 worth of rear seat belts in a 2022 Jeep Wrangler 4xe because of a nervous seatbelt chewing greyhound.
So for me, I've been fortunate with my cars, but I think early in the year I went to put my seatbelt in and a spring shot out, like a cartoon, out of the seatbelt in my BRZ. And so it was like 3 a.m. I had a 6 a.m. flight, and I'm like, okay, what am I gonna do? I'm leaving my house to go to the airport. I can't take the other car because my wife needs it for work. So I'm just like, I'm fiddling with it to get it to work. And I finally get it in, but in order to, it doesn't have the spring anymore to get it out. So when I get to the place, it takes a little while to get it out. So that was sort of the weirdest fix. And it was like $70. I went to the Subaru dealership. I ordered it. I was still able to I could get it in. It would hold, but it took a little while to get it out. So if I was in an accident and there was a fire, I would have died. But that's the weirdest thing I've had to fix this year. But all I remember is that it's dark. This little spring that shoots up. And I was like, what the? Yeah, I think that's the only thing that's broken on any of my cars this year, except for flat tires and stuff like that. But it was also very weird with the seatbelt thing, because that had never happened. I mean, I've had cars for over 15 years that the seatbelts are fine after all that. It's sort of a weird thing to break on a car.
I had on the Miata, the fuel gauge hadn't been working for a couple of years, actually. And so I was just using the trip odometer to keep track. You know, every time I filled it up with gas, you know, I would, reset the trip odometer, and I only drive it, you know, for fun, you know, so about every 150 miles or so, I would stop and put gas in it, reset it. And so, I finally decided, you know, screw it. I'm going to, you know, figure out how to fix this thing. And part of the reason why I had left it is I figured I'm going to have to take it somewhere, you know, drop the gas tank to do it. And when I actually researched, replacing the sender unit, turns out that it was actually a lot easier than I thought. So on the gas tank is behind the seats, between the seats and the trunk. And, so there's a carpeted panel. When you put the top down, you know, there's a shelf behind the seats there. And all I had to do is actually just pull up the carpet that was on top of this. There's an access panel, you know, five, six screws to take this access panel off. And then right on the top of the gas tank was the thing to access the fuel pump and the sender unit. It was right there. You know, another five or six screws, lift this thing out, take off the sender unit, put another one on, put it back in. Except when I pulled off the main access panel, I found a bunch of stuff sitting on top of the gas tank, which it's like, as soon as I saw it, I knew, oh shit, it's a mouse nest. There was mice. And, you know, so, you know, they had chewed through one of the wires for the fuel gauge sender unit. As it turns out, even after I resoldered that, I still had to replace the sender unit. So the sender unit had died anyway, but they had also chewed through one of the wires. So I had a little bit of soldering to do. But before I got to the soldering, I had to clean out all of the stuff, all the detritus that the mice had brought up to make their little nest.
You're going to get the Hanta virus.
The parcel shelf.
Or bubonic plague.
So I get my shop vac out and I'm rooting around in there, vacuuming up all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's that sound you get, you know, when something plugs the end of your vacuum. And so I pull it out and it's like, there's a mouse there on the end of the vacuum wriggling around. It's like, oh shit. So I turn it off, take it up, shake it out on the ground, to get it out. But you know, finished cleaning that off, replaced the sender unit. You know, it was about a 15-minute job. And you know, I got a replacement sender unit on eBay, for like $100, I think, and fixed that up. So yeah, so that was an easy fix. And then the only other issue that we had to fix this year was when we bought our replacement EV6 after the first one got totaled. Before I bought it, you know, I put the VIN number, you know, I'd gone on the NHTSA recall website, and you can put in a VIN number to see if there's any open recalls on the vehicle. I put in the VIN number to check for recalls, because, you know, these EV6s, like all the other Hyundai and Kia EVs, had the issue with the integrated charge control unit, and it would fail and not charge the 12-volt battery. And so I put the VIN in, said, no, you know, no unrepaired recalls. Now, it turns out that no unrepaired recalls doesn't necessarily mean, I found out after the fact, that it doesn't necessarily mean that the ICCU has actually been replaced. It just means it's been inspected. You know, they inspected it. It was fine. It hadn't failed. So they didn't do anything with it. Well, about a month and a half after, you know, about 2 months after we got the car, I was on a trip. I was coming home the next day. My wife texts me and says, just got an electric system fault on the car, and it went into turtle mode. She was only like two blocks from the house, so she was able to get it home, but the ICCU had failed. And so she got it home, got it in the garage. When I got home the next day, I plugged in the scanner. Yeah, it's like the 12 volt battery was low. It wasn't charging. It was the ICCU fault. And so I had to have it towed to the dealer. It was fixed under warranty. That didn't cost me anything. And the dealer was great. They actually, you know, they were, and this was like right before Christmas. And they were thinking that, you know, they weren't sure if they were going to be able to get the part in before Christmas and get it replaced, in which case it would have been like till December 29th. So it would have been in the shop for a week and a half. As it turns out, the part got shipped out like the next day. They got it fixed in 2 days and was back on the road and haven't had a problem since.
Yeah, I've always had such great, not so much with like the dealers like as salespeople, but like the service centers. Like when we had our Mini, we used to take it to the Mini service center because it was less expensive than taking it to Jiffy Lube. I don't change my own oil. I stopped doing that in the 90s. Like I'll switch anything else in the car, but changing the oil is just, I'm not going to do that. And our dealer service center for the Hyundai, they're fantastic. Just great, wonderful people. And every time I hear the dealers are like, oh, well, we're not going to make money at EVs, da, 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 da. I'm like, lean into your service centers. That's where all the cool people work. All the cool, nice people work in the service center and the parts department. They're like, hey, what you need? I'm like, oh, I need this. And then you see all the cool stuff for your car from that, like, you know, like, you know, the Ford branded or the Hyundai branded or the Toyota branded or Subaru branded, like little tchotchkes you can buy. You're like, oh, maybe I'll get a, you know, keychain or whatever. I don't think it's the same as like, you know, the money they get from selling a car, but I really think it should lean into the nice people you have in your dealerships.
Yeah, especially, you know, when it's, you know, if it's something that's under warranty anyway, you know, definitely take advantage of that.
Well, it's not free, but, you know, it's money.
Well, I mean, it's free. It's free to the customer. You know, they get paid by the manufacturer for doing warranty work. So absolutely, you know, take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the idea that you can just get to the fuel pump through a panel on top is just another yes vote for what's the answer is always Miata.
Yeah, that's just good design for serviceability.
Oh yeah. My friend sent me an MG like on Facebook Marketplace the other day, and she's like, "Oh, should I get this?" And I just replied, "No, period, because it's an MG." Because it's an MG. I'm like, "No." Yeah. She's like, "Oh, I'm like, you should get a Miata. Get the ND. You should get, and the ND is probably the best for non-car people. I fit in it, so I'm happy, and her boyfriend looks a little taller."
Or but an again, SE.
The answer was Miata.
Yeah.
ND.
Unless you're someone who likes to spend a lot of time working on your cars. Yeah. If you have the time and the wherewithal to work on your cars, then, you know, then absolutely get an MG or, you know, some other, you know,
Jaguar.
British Roadster.
Yeah. Get some other British car. If you have a lot of meters in your home, like the little electric meters, like the test stuff.
Yeah.
Like I have
meters
like
and voltmeters and
voltmeters. If you have those in your home, if you're that type of person, yeah, go ahead, get a British car. Or as my cousin once said, I'm gonna get a Saab, and I turned to him and said, "No, you're not." Because he's not a car person. Yeah, if you know how to solder, you're golden.
If you have multimeters and you know how to solder, then you're good. You know, then get a British car.
Get a British car. And if you're an architect, get a Saab. An architect who knows how to work on a car. Get us up.
Okay. Or if you're Keith Price. Keith buys lots of old Saabs and Volvos, but, you know, Keith is kind of weird. anyway, last one's from Colin in Minnesota. So last week we talked about, some of the parts from cheap cars that show up on supercars. Colin in Minnesota wrote to us and said, "I'm a total sucker for, did you know this car used X part from Y car trivia? One of my favorites is that the F1, the McLaren F1, used the front marker lenses from the Lotus M100 Elan. Peter Stevens kept that a secret from Gordon Murray. And Peter Stevens designed the M100 Elan, and he also designed the F1. But he kept that a secret from Gordon Murray because he hated the front wheel drive M100. Probably apocryphal, but who knows? I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if that was the case, if that was a true story, but you never know. And listening to the podcast while putting a new water pump on my 79 Alpha Spider here in snowy Minnesota, you guys are even more entertaining when working with brake cleaner."
Yeah. If you...
we're not, you know... We try to be entertaining, but I don't want to recommend working with brake cleaner unless you absolutely have to. I can definitely see how, you know, you might get a few more laughs out of us if you were inhaling some of that stuff.
Everything's funnier when you're doing brakes. Yeah, these guys are hilarious.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next week, and hopefully Nicole will be back, and hopefully Rose is okay.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.